Slinging spells down the street, same old decks we played last week. It's MTG in quarantine. We're all right. We're all right. The MTG in Quarantine Podcast.
Heyo, what is up, everybody? My name is MJ, and you are listening to the one and only MTG in Quarantine Podcast, where the mantra is EDH, community, now and always. As usual, before we get started here, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd like to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people supporting me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. It's a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Bents, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And if you haven't heard before, I am now an official Quiver Time brand ambassador. So if you are in the market for a Quiver Time case to hold all of your extremely precious magic cards, because let's be honest, the backpack just won't do. Or if you need a playmat holder, deck boxes, sleeves, or all of the above, and probably all of the above, you can go on over to quivertime.com and utilize my promo code MTGIQ for a, I guess, 15% off your purchase. I honestly don't remember. Or you can utilize my affiliate code, which is in the link tree in the episode description. And again, every purchase over there helps support the channel and is greatly appreciated. You can also pick up your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That's inkedgaming.com. Got two really awesome versions. You're going to want one for you and all your friends. So again, you can find the link to that and my affiliate code over at my link tree in the episode description. Now, on to today's episode. So I'm sure that everyone out there is really excited about the new Lost Caverns of Ixalan set that is coming out here. Obviously, dinosaurs, merfolk, vampires, and honestly, more dinosaurs. What isn't there to like? As well as a return to, I would say, one of the more popular Vorthos planes we've had in quite a while here for Magic the Gathering. But again, it's not just me here to talk about Lost Caverns of Ixalan like I normally do with my very, very bad predictions. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce a brand new guest, but an old face to the MTG community here today. So I'd like to introduce, without further ado, Stalwart Ursa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad that I've now become an old face. It does me feel that I've been here long enough to become an old face. Hi, everybody. What's up?
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, and again, we were talking about this before the show, and it's like, we first met, I guess, about 9 months ago. That seems crazy, but time just seems to fly in this year 2023. I mean, what is time anymore after 2020, right?
Yeah, that is very true, yes. Time on Beyoncé's internet especially is just truly a sieve at this point. It's so wild to think that Philly was about 10-ish months ago, almost a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely ludicrous. Hi, everybody. I am very excited about going back to Ixalan. You are correct. There is a lot of Vorthos heavy goodness there. And I'm also ready to go back and see it done with a lot of care and love. Not that it wasn't the first time, but like when you get it done by people who have experienced like Latin and Hispanic culture and kind of understand the history, it takes on a whole new meaning of flavor, and I am loving it.
Definitely. But yeah, we're gonna have a whole conversation here, but first and most importantly, introduce yourself. Tell the good folks out there all the content that you create so that they can find you if they haven't already.
Oh yeah, totally. So yes, as aforementioned, my name is Stalwart Ursa. I, for the past almost year now, have been the internet's first, and at this point only, geek mosa. I am a geek that is also a chismosa, so I just love looking into various geeky hobbies of mine and kind of getting all the juicy information that I can about them and making them as accessible for everybody as possible. So whether you're a longtime fan of the thing, or you have a casual interest, or whatever I do in my little videos makes you laugh. It's a good way to get joy in the world, and geeky joy is joy for everybody, and I really appreciate that. So generally, I tend to make TikToks and YouTubes about various hobbies that I'm in. A lot of the time at this point, it's a lot of Magic the Gathering lore, just because it's real dense, everybody, and I think that people should be able to approach it easily, even if you're new players. So I kind of make like SNL type style skits about all the various lore and characters we love. And I make crafts of different things in Magic just because I have time on my hands and want to make little crafty things. That's generally, I think, what people know me the most about for.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I'm going to have to ask about Skrelv, but that'll get pushed to like the second half of the episode. Really, okay. I think totally the folks are totally here right now to listen about Ixalan. So just really, really want to pick your brain for a couple of minutes on what you're really enjoying about the previews that we've received for Lost Caverns of Ixalan, and like what is getting you the most excited about this upcoming set?
Oh, man. I mean, the cards in general are really freaking rad. So much of the artistic references that we're getting to, like, different historical figures, different mythology, and also just different, like, cultural touchstones has been really cool to see throughout the preview season. And also, I got my first preview cards in this set, so that was very cool. It makes me love merfolks now, if only because my first preview card was a merfolk. And that's really what I've been looking forward to, is kind of seeing... I've been a completionist before, until this set, which is gonna, you know, be very painful in my wallet. But I think just because all of the art is so beautiful. And I just want it all. All of it just looks so cool all the time, every time I look at the art.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from a lot of other folks in the community that, like, this set is definitely a home run, not just for flavor, but also just the cards are really, really good. People really want to play the set. And I think that when it comes to a Magic the Gathering, especially a standard legal set, you want the cards that people want to collect, right? That yeah. They have the really cool alternate arts. They just look really cool, even just like the base version of them. But then they also do really powerful things that people want to play in some constructed formats. Obviously, I'm kind of skipping over limited here again, because I feel like that's kind of a given. But people want to play these in constructed formats, whether they're 60 cards, whether they're EDH, CDH, whatever. And I think that right there really, at least at this point in time, usually signals a very successful Magic set, just as like a baseline kind of investment from Wizards of the Coast, that the players are invested in the set, and that is always a good sign.
Oh, totally. And I think also what's very cool for like me, when I build decks mostly around silly themes or stories that I want to tell in whatever deck that I'm playing. And then, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I had fun because I built it around a theme. But it really seems that so many of these cards really attribute themselves to letting players brew creatively. So you really can kind of build exactly what you want to with a lot of these cards. And also they gave us like a few more artifact mana rocks, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, you're going to have to spill the beans on some of the things you're excited to build about around.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry for putting you on the spot like this, but no, I just feel like there's so much stuff you have to build. It's like, where do you start?
I think for me, where I'm going to have to start is likely going to be building kind of like my pet commander deck, in that it's always going to be a turn zero, get everyone's approval on it, because Huatli and Saheeli don't have partners on their cards, unfortunately, but they interact together so well. So I very much want to build Huatli and Saheeli, or what I am calling Huatli y Saheeli esposas, and that's in Spanish, Huatli and Saheeli wives. Because they have such a cool interaction that Saheeli can make token copies of whatever creature or artifact you have that are artifact tokens. And then Huatli can help you produce more dinosaurs. And then all of the tokens that Saheeli makes also have haste. So it's really just girlfriends ramping and making a ton of creatures. And that's really how I tend to play in general. And now I just get to do it with my favorite couple on Magic.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen Wizards kind of drop the ball on the potential of Planeswalkers as partners. But maybe eventually they'll get the hint, I guess, from the Vorthos players who really, really want to see this happen.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, also, since they've been desparked, like, it was the least they could do was let us actually have the little italics partners in there. But it's okay. It's going to be my turn zero pet deck, and I'm super excited to build it. I've actually not really built something that had a lot of dinosaurs in it, so this is going to be very interesting for me.
Definitely, definitely. And again, there are just so many legendary creatures in this set that there is definitely something for everyone, along with the ever-present commander decks, one for each creature type of the four main ones. I know I forgot to mention pirates earlier, so just so everyone at home is sure, I have now completed the cycle there.
There you go. You got there.
Finally figured out, even though I'm staring at my Ixalan print I got at Comic-Con this year, I was like, huh, I wonder what I'm forgetting. So it's real like that, folks. You know, don't blame the podcaster. Sometimes I make mistakes.
What about you? Is there anything that's drawing you to be excited for Ixalan?
Again, I haven't really focused on the cards too much. I really just enjoy the flavor, honestly, of the set. I think for me, it ends up being a situation where I just enjoy the set in general. I'm not really looking at specific cards. Because I figure I'm going to end up finding these cards like a year from now, because it's a 15 cent uncommon. I'm going to happen to have a deck that needs this one specific effect. It's like, oh, hey, I remember that set. So,
yeah.
Let's see. I mean, I know for a fact that this card is going to cause me some serious grief down the road, and that is the Dauntless Dismantler. One 4 human artificer costing 1 and a white says artifacts your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped, and double X and white sacrifice Dauntless Dismantler. What is with that today? Destroy each artifact with mana value X. Basically, the you cannot play treasures creature.
The only treasures will be on my side of the board. Thank you.
Yep. This is gonna suck, especially in CDH, obviously, that I play, and for certain decks that obviously run a lot of zero cost mana rocks or treasures especially. This is really gonna hose that. Plus it just has that blind obedience effect on there, so it's a good card. I just don't like it.
Yeah, that, you know what, that's totally fair. I think a solid like 60-40 on like whether or not you like a card is like 60% if it looks really cool and has cool mechanics, and then the 40% are, but do I like it? Do I know it's going to be used against me, or am I going to use it against people? Absolutely valid.
Oh yeah, it's, but outside of that, I honestly just love the art in this set, especially the use of that blue color palette. I feel like that really works for the blue cards. It really sets them apart. And yeah, I mean, honestly, the palette on all the cards, now that I'm looking at them in Scryfall, it's like it's every card really works with the rest of the frame. And
oh, yeah,
I don't remember a set where I could really say that like the art, the color palette being used really fed in with the color of the card, with the color identity. But this set really, really takes that to heart. So yeah, Wizards put a lot of talent into the set, and the artist brought these ideas to life, and it's just great to be able to see just that much color, honestly, being utilized on Magic cards.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's something that I really appreciate is how wide of the swath of colors that they used in this set for all of the art, because I was really concerned when we got the initial, hey, we're doing Lost Caverns of Ixalan, I was really concerned that we would get kind of what happens a lot of the time in Hollywood whenever something happens to be set in like Spain or Mesoamerica, that, or any of like the Latin America, that everything kind of gets like an orange filter on the film. So you get muted colors, but everything's orange because it's Hispanic and Latin. And it's very annoying when that happens all the time in filmed media. So to see this be actively not that, that this is just, we're going to use every color in pretty and gorgeous, vibrant ways, it does the heart good.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, now that I'm actually seeing all the cards next to each other in the same list, I think I'm learning some things. That's good to see. It's always a little bit difficult to keep up with all the cards when they're getting previewed on Twitter. I refuse to call it X, so on Twitter.
It's absolutely always Twitter.
It's always so difficult to really keep track of what card goes with what, right? Because just everything is like, it's a single post, or someone is just like, hey, I found this broken combo. And, you know, here's four cards in a row. It's like, I barely understand what the new card does. Stop littering my feed with other pieces, right?
Yeah.
So it's good to be able to actually see them all together so I can actually get a cohesive understanding of how everything fits together.
Totally. And it's always so cool seeing that and actually staring at Scryfall and being like, wow, I can actually connect the dots now because I can see everything. I'm not staring at step one, wondering how this becomes an ultimate combo.
Wait, are these the actual basic lands? I have not seen these.
Yes, the basic lands are very gorgeous, but the full arts are my favorite. I love the full arts in this set.
Oh, man, that is amazing.
I am going to go so broke making most of my decks full arts now.
Well, of course. I mean, how else would you play Magic? I mean,
it's true.
Play like a peon and play basic lands when you could play the actual like super awesome full art versions. I mean,
yeah, the delightful travel poster versions. Absolutely not. Come on, I will always choose a travel poster.
Wow, I cannot believe I did not see these until now. Wow, folks, if you have not taken a look at the basic lands for the new Ixalan set, the full art lands anyway, you really should do that because these are amazing. And honestly, I'm not gonna say there haven't been other really good versions, but these could potentially be the best full art lands I've ever seen. You know, just case closed, hands down. We're gonna go there.
That is good. That is a plus take. I approve.
Wow, I'm just blown away by how good these are. Wow, how did I miss these?
Because there's so much in this set that everyone's talking about. Every new hotness and every new mana rock and every new thing that's gonna like pop off. No one ever talks about the lands. The humble ones that are there that we can actually cast things with. No one talks about them.
Definitely. Wow. Okay. I think I'm going to have to find a few of these cards and jam them in whatever decks I can find them home for. But
yeah, I think a lot of have you looked at the gods? The gods, depending on what like color of mana that you typically love playing, all of the gods are just such a gift to their different color palettes.
I mean, the basic versions or the showcase versions?
I would say the basic versions, just in general, like all of the gods are so good in their various colors. So like O'Hare Ashunil, the red god who looks got the dinosaur arms, he's a beast and then flips into a land. They all flip into lands.
Huh. Obviously following up with the, were they enchantments or artifacts in the last block, Ixalan block that flipped over into lands? I think they're both technically. So,
I believe here's a fun little history tidbit about me. The first Ixalan block was actually when I started playing Magic.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very cool and very much like a full circle moment when I got the initial like, hey, do you want to get a preview card for Ixalan? It brought a little tear to my eye because I started playing Magic around that pre-release was like that 2017 first Ixalan release. I started there, and then I did a lot of table kitchen magic for a long time, and then really, really got into it around like 2018. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
that sounds like living the dream right there.
yeah. Somehow I am, and I am thankful for it every day. Big shout out to everybody who likes all my dorky things on TikTok.
Yep, TikTok's a world to itself, as I found.
Oh yeah, it is. It is an interesting place. Being on there, a lot of people assume that I am far younger than I am. I am very much fandom old. I am definitely in my 30s.
Okay, so yeah, I've looked at all of the cards now. I'm going to have to take a longer look at these when I get the chance, but that's outside the purview of today's episode. So let's move on to the next adjacent topic, which is the Vorthos implications here. Obviously, if you haven't read the story out there, folks, I highly recommend you do so, because there's a lot of stuff going on. Again, it's like, I don't really know how much I want to spoil, but on the other hand, you've had several weeks to read it, so let's just spoil away.
Well, to make an acquiesce there, should read it, absolutely. But if it's a lot of reading on a phone or laptop, the audiobook versions are just starting to drop this week. So those are going to be on the YouTube channel for Magic Official. So if you can't read them, definitely listen to them, which is also a very cool option.
Yeah, I keep forgetting those are available. But again, I'm just the kind of person who enjoys reading it on the screen. So maybe I'm weird like that, but...
No, that's fair. I also enjoy reading it myself, just because I make fun voices for everybody. But, you know, sometimes it's a focus thing or like an accessibility thing. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's just easier to audiobook it.
Oh, trying to read that text on a phone, though. Anyone who could do that easily, I don't know how you can do that. I could not.
Having little computer glasses. that's what I do.
Fair enough. So,
but
yeah.
Yes. Vorthos implications.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on the story?
I really liked it. I really liked how much it was kind of actually inherently about Ixalan and the development of Ixalan, setting up like the past and putting little threads of things we can find out and come back to. I found was very cool, because while the last Ixalan story was really fun and introduced like Huatli and Orzaka and like the Sun Empire and all the factions, it really seemed like Ixalan and the people who lived on Ixalan were tertiary to the story. And every time people take away thinking about the Ixalan story, it's always about Vraska and Jace. And that's fine. I like Vraska and Jace, but I really wanted to learn about the people of Ixalan. And I think this story really delivers on that.
Yeah. Any major highlights you want to touch on about that story?
Yeah. I think so. I really wish they had put it on the website in the order that I think goes really well. But I actually really loved the side story with Saheeli. I loved the whole story in general, but I really loved the side story with Saheeli, because the author, Valerie Valdez, I believe, she does a really good job of having these characters who are not of Ixalan be important to the story, but not make them the focal points of the story. It's very much the history of Ixalan and the people who are living in Ixalan and of Ixalan and how they interact with their history, which is really cool. But the people who aren't from Ixalan still are important in their own various ways, and kind of how they're going through Ixalan is very interesting to me. So like to see in Saheeli's side story, Saheeli's kind of struggling with, I love Huatli and I love that I'm able to be here with her, but I no longer can feel my spark, and that's really weird. How do I make this a place that feels like my home? And see her kind of go through that evolution and also kind of do like political espionage along the way is really cool for me. I really enjoyed seeing that. And I also really just dig all the stuff with the Aztecs and seeing everything that they have of cultures that were just to the Sun Empire thousands of years old and are still thriving inside the plane, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, so for those who haven't read the story, we now have a new faction, which is kind of an old faction in a way, closely related, that it lives in basically, if you want to imagine, the plane's core, I guess, and has not basically really been contacted for, would they say, 1,000 years?
Yeah, about, and, yeah.
And it's a, thousand. And it's a little bit of culture shock when a bunch of different factions kind of ram into each other at the same time. And then whatever the pirate story just kind of spiraled off from there a little bit.
Yeah. That's the other thing, too, is I think the pirates, they kind of lost track of the pirates because the pirates were dealing with a different creature type called the mycoids that are kind of like spore fungus zombie creatures. So they were dealing with running into those and trying to survive. but like, again, in the side story, we get like kind of the sprinklings of the pirates no longer want to be seen as pillagers. The pirates want to be taken seriously as like a nation. Which I thought was really fascinating and kind of cool.
Yeah, that was a really cool section. Again, spoiler alert, I know we've already kind of blown the lid off of that one, but there's a, I don't want to call it like a peace summit, but like a summit of understanding, I would say, between multiple factions, and Admiral Brass basically kicking down the door and basically just gotta talk.
I'm invited.
Yeah, that was a very interesting exchange, I'll say. And I don't want to spoil the cool factor of it to the folks out there who haven't read it, but it's like, this is one of those moments where it's like you can visualize that moment in your head and you just can't help but smile. It's like, this, it's silly, but it's also really cool at the same time.
Yeah. You're seeing the sparks of what the future of Ixalan will be in this scene, in that side story. And it's so fascinating. And then it even ties into stuff that happens at the end, because stuff happens. And then Whatley gets word that Saheeli needs assistance, effectively where the side story takes place. And that's how we end off with Whatley, is Whatley's like, well, I am tired and I have been shook to my core, literally, from going to the core of the plane. And now I got to go deal with political intrigue. And yeah, that is very tiring, but a worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah, honestly, now that we talk about the side story, it's kind of weird that actually wasn't just considered a main story article, given the fact that typically the side stories have just been, and now for something completely different. And this one is actually directly related to the story. So I guess I was a little confused about why that kind of got pushed to the sidebar versus the main story. But again, they're kind of stuck on this five episodes per set thing. It's like, I don't know. It's like 5.5, really.
Yeah. Well, this one is like technically 6. So the side story is... it's not even like a little flash story. It's the length of a regular chapter, which is very cool. So it is technically longer than, no, not technically, it is longer than Wilds of Eldraine was. I think the only thing that I can think in terms of why it's a side story versus like being part of just the main story is probably because they tend to want to highly focus on like the main boom, boom, boom action kind of a thing. And while the political intrigue and like the future of the building of Ixalan and like character moments are really, really cool for like Vorthos nerds and people who like drama, it's not always the flashy thing that people typically tune in for. So that's the only thing that I can think of, is that they were like, this is really important and people need to know this. But, you know, it can be an enhancer to the story, not just part of the story, is the only thing I can think of.
Hmm. Good point. Good point. Yeah, it just felt like one of those stories that had a lot, there was a lot more intertwined with the main story than pretty much all the side stories we've seen up to this point, which usually just seem like they're very unrelated in most cases. They've even introduced new characters that you don't see in the main story, just finding different ways to keep that story going, I would say.
Yeah.
And yeah, since we're on the topic of the story here, the fact that we did not get a full wrap-up ending like we did with Eldraine, I thought that was an interesting way to just kind of leave things off unresolved instead of just saying, oh, hey, everything's cool now, we're just going to rebuild or, you know, insert XYZ, right? It's like there's still a lot of issues. This main battle has ended, but ... And I thought that was a very interesting flavor implication, because obviously we're on a, what, 2-3 year story path here, I guess, at this point. So obviously we're going to be seeing these characters again. We're going to be returning to Ixalan in some shape or form. But the fact that there's really no resolution, I think, definitely sets apart even just from the Eldraine set we got a few months ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed it because it does signal, kind of exactly like you said, that we're going to go back soonish to either continue or to see the effects of what we didn't see, both of which would be cool either way. But it was interesting because, yeah, like Wilds of Eldraine more or less capped off with the conceit that, like, this is the end of this fairy tale. What's the next fairy tale? So, like, that was really interesting. But to see that this was left off with the main battle being done, but that there are still threads of another looming threat and the struggle between creating a new future on Ixalan, was really fascinating to me. It almost kind of feels like, kind of like, it's never going to get to the point of like Ravnican politics, but it almost does kind of feel like one of the things that we're going to really have to deal with is like the politics of all of these factions coming together and recognizing each other as effectively mini nations, as opposed to constantly fighting.
And that's
going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you said, that you really enjoy the world building with this set because it highlights everything about Ixalan itself, the plane, but still kind of gives those little nods here and there to, I don't want to say interstellar activity, but interplanar activity.
I mean, kind of almost the same.
Yeah, it feels like that. It's just I keep wanting to say planet instead of plane. It keeps throwing me off for some reason. You would think I would know this stuff, you know, paying this much attention to magic, but nope. Click record and those thoughts kind of go out the window. But yeah.
Oh,
so,
you know, another Vorthos thing, like a far-reaching Vorthos implication that I'm is, so this part of like the 3-4 year story path that we're on right now is circling around Kellen, farm boy supreme, going plane to plane, walking through the omen paths. And now it seems finding friends and adding to his little party of jumping through omen paths. So that's going to be really interesting to see, one, how many people he kind of gets to kind of plane hop with him. And two, if that draws the attention of undesirables in the planes.
Possibly. I mean, it just seems like a teen show of some sort, as he's getting a raggedy band of teenagers like himself in to just explore the world, go on a giant interplanar road trip, I guess. So,
yeah. And something that my wife and I have been like spitballing about, like having our little theory board of Vorthos things.
Okay.
Is back in March of the Machines, in like the side stories where we see stuff happening to different people. In the Strixhaven college campus, we saw that some of the teachers and deans did get Phyrexianized, and then, or we saw their bodies. However, we did not see the body of Kasmina, so we know that Kasmina is still alive. And Kasmina, dear listeners, if you've not heard of her, Kasmina is a very interesting character because she was a dean on Strixhaven, but she is also a very manipulative person who we find out through side, very, very, very tertiary side story, Sprinklings, was the reason that, oh gosh, I'm blanking on this character's name, but she was the reason that one of the former planeswalkers was sparked, is because she caused so much trauma in his life to force him to spark, because she does that to as many people as she can find. She finds people, effectively more or less children, and causes so much trauma in their lives to see if they can spark, because she wants to amass power to be able to fight a quote-unquote threat that is coming. So I'm really concerned about Kellen hopping along with his friends everywhere, drawing the attention of Kasmina.
Fair, but I feel like also the same set also really in some way devalued the planeswalker as well, because we've obviously seen a reduction in the number of planeswalkers, so I wonder how that would work in as well. But again, that's another whole thing that we could go on down here. I guess the only other thing to ask about this particular story is, where do you think we're headed the next time we see Ixalan? Because obviously, as we've already mentioned, this is not the only time. They're not going to set up all this stuff, make the set, and then just set it aside, right? There will be some sort of return. What do you think happens on said return, whether that's just a minor little story point like we had with March of the Machines, or whether that's just a full-blown, like, multiple story arc?
I think that sort of depends on how this set is taken, personally. But I think I would really love to see two more sets here, to kind of have it be one set is dealing with kind of the revolution of the Sun Empire, because that's something that's in the works of possibly happening, is a revolution. And the various political intrigue of all of the factions kind of seeing each other and recognizing each other as nations. And we have a god on the loose, or a former god on the loose, in Alkazatz, kind of being released by renegade vampire individuals. So now we have Bat God on the loose, getting ready to cause chaos. He has escaped the caverns and is now out in the wilds.
Yes,
Ixalan, and I don't think that's going to go well for anybody.
No, and unfortunately now I can't unsee the Bat God joke from Twitter earlier. It's like, oh, seriously?
That's basically what's happening. Yes.
No.
but it's going to be a thing. So either they're going to try and deal with like the revolution and like the political intrigue stuff, and then Bat God is two different sets, or it's going to be, we're trying a revolution and oh God, Bat God. So I could see either way, and I'm very excited about both.
Meanwhile, the Legion of Doom.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah,
you're just going to have the Bat God with the few vampires that still like the Bat God. Because that's the other thing, too, that I really like, is that we are seeing the vampires are taking a really cool direction of being written, because they're kind of following the historical path of, like, the Spaniards. Because obviously the vampires are conquistadors. But with this story, we saw them kind of taking this shift kind of exactly in history, where Spaniards were like, wow, that was really barbaric and awful of us. Maybe we should just stop doing that. But you always have the one guy that keeps wanting to do the terrible, awful thing. And in the story, the one guy is Vito, and he's the one who wants to rise Alkazatz, where everyone else kind of wants to follow Alendra.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to kind of see them handling that with the vampires here in this set. And I thought that was neat.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this might be one of the deepest moments we've ever had in vampire politics in Magic the Gathering. I never thought I would say that, but here we are.
Yeah. I mean, once you get off Innistrad, I feel like things get a little easier for vampires, but...
I don't know, because it seems like vampire politics on Innistrad are pretty straightforward, whereas what we're seeing just in this set alone for Ixalan, I think kind of muddies the waters a little bit when we just think about vampires, because on Innistrad, it's basically about consolidating power within the major families. Here, we have a major schism in the fact that some are trying to, you know, keep their church together, you know, try to keep their society together, I guess. And the rest are just trying to go and consolidate their own power. It's like you have this major schism within the population itself, whereas I feel like on Innistrad, the vampire families really don't care about each other unless they absolutely have to. So it's just a different way of looking at the same character type that we have across multiple planes. And the fact they're just being demonstrated in such a different way that we're getting a very different feel, a very different story from this set versus any of the times we go to Innistrad. So it's cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very true. That was a very cool thing to see for me. And also, I mean, on a shallow note, as somebody who aforementioned loves the lore and loves the art of this set, I love how cool the Sun Empire gets to be. Because, like, when you really look at Ixalan, the last Ixalan set was like, yeah, here's the Sun Empire. Anyway, here's all the other factions. But we don't really get to see the Sun Empire living life and being badasses in their own way. And this set definitely lets the Sun Empire and the Olteks, their ancestors, really show off how cool they are. And I loved seeing that.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like if there was a faction that didn't really get much going for it in this particular set, it was probably the Merfolk, but that's okay. I mean, this is a major, major creature type throughout Magic's history, so it's like we don't really need them so much, especially when we can boost the other factions and they're doing cool stuff. So we'll come back to this, and it all ends up working out well, because I would say the Merfolk had a larger role in the last six long blocks, so it's okay that they kind of took a bit of a backseat, I would say, in this set. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so, but I think in terms of, like, mechanics, many freaking good Merfolk in this set.
Definitely.
But I think they actually will end up being kind of, like, integral to the political story that's being set up for the next set. That's going to be really cool to see.
Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm really excited to see where the pirates go from here, because obviously we mentioned the Admiral Brass busting into a meeting unannounced, which just seems really cool in its own right. And the fact that the pirates are trying to organize themselves as a collective bargaining unit, I suppose, instead of just a bunch of one-off, trying to find the right word here, but it always escapes me. Yeah. Renegade crews, I guess, that lone wolf crews. There we go.
Yeah. And, well, even like in their main story, like little plot thread, while it kind of like loses itself a little bit, I do like the conceit that, yeah, they're dealing with like these fungal creatures that are terrifying. They were doing that not because they were just like plundering a cave. It was a settlement. They were building a settlement in the cave to have like a fortified situation, and then they stopped getting contact from the people building it. And that's why we send in Malcolm to like look into it. So yep. I thought that was really cool that they weren't just, you know, effectively mining. They weren't mining to just get gold. They were trying to build a home and then unfortunately find the mycoids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we shall see where that story thread leads. But for now, we're just going to have to wait for the next set and see where it leads.
Yeah. Great. Oh, I'm also really, really excited about the murderers at Carlisle Manor. Ooh, it has nothing to do with Ixalan, but I'm excited about that being the next set.
It's the next set, so of course we have to be excited, because we're always in preview season.
Always.
Isn't that basically being spoiled in like 2 to 3 weeks now, or at a first look or something?
So. Yeah, they just the artist who did the big swatch image did just drop the full image, and that nice. It looks really cool. I'm very excited about it. I dorkily am very excited and hope, because it's Hasbro, so hopefully they actually do a Magic the Gathering version of Clue.
Okay.
Because I just would love to see that, and I would love to own that, because Clue is a really great game. So I'm just, I want to see that. I want to own that. Yes. I think it'd be neat.
Yes, I guess my one caveat is I just want a Tim Curry cameo, just because. It doesn't have it doesn't have to be flavorful. I just, if there's any sort of tie-in, even just like a comment in that set, just please, Wizards, please, Hasbro, just do it, you know? The people have spoken, or at least, you know, I have spoken.
There you go. It's fair. I mean, you know what? Look, Hasbro just released their, like, 100 Years of Hasbro, like, special edition version of Monopoly. And it has, like, Jace is on there as, like, a character that can do stuff. And I'm like, okay, I don't want Magic's only fun family board game to be Satan's cardboard that is Monopoly. Monopoly is a terrible game. I want a fun game. So we have a crossover, please.
So Murders in the Building is okay.
Oh, totally. Murders in the Building with like a pipe? That's fun. That's family fun. Monopoly? No. We hate capitalism.
Can we agree on Yahtzee or something?
Okay. Yahtzee's fine. That's cool. Yahtzee's cool. Monopoly.
Yeah, yeah. It would definitely be cool to see a board game tie-in, because we obviously had that tie-in-ish with, was it Explorers of Ixalan, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
They came out with the original Ixalan block, which wasn't really a board game. It kind of was, but it was kind of just Magic with extra steps. So yeah. Having a real tie-in would actually be real cool. And they'd sell quite a few units. I mean, I don't feel like a lot of folks who play board games anymore play like these classic games. So maybe you can reach through to the younger generation by selling Clue to nerds like us who actually enjoy the IP that's being used and enjoy the application.
Oh, totally. I can only hope, especially because, you know, just to be vain for a hot second, everyone that they redesigned is really hot. So I think that would just make for a bestseller, personally.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, so I guess we'll have to see where that goes going into 2024. But for now, we have Ixalan coming up. That is coming out this week for pre-release and is releasing in all stores next week. So definitely go on out to pre-release. You have a chance. Or just pick up singles, release products, or just all things Ixalan. Just go. You can go find that very soon after this episode is released. So it won't be too long. You won't have to agonize over for long. And if you're listening to this afterwards and asking why I'm saying these things so much, it was prudent at the time to say that. So
it's true.
Here we are.
Actually, also, hopefully, people find out about this, but I'll say it here for my due diligence. It's not being promoted a ton, but if you are somebody that really likes doing limited, like pre-releases, if you do two pre-releases consecutively at an LGS, make sure they have it and they're doing it, but at an LGS, if you do two pre-releases, they have exclusive, I can't tell if it's a pin or a button, of characters from this set that you can get.
Interesting.
Yeah. So far, the only one that I've seen is Bantleza, Kwatli's new raptor. So I don't know if it's all Bantleza or if it's like other characters. They've been kind of hush-hush about it. So it's something that I'm trying to get people to know about, because I'm huge on collecting pins.
Seems kind of weird that they wouldn't try to market that, you know, especially since it's trying to get people to the game store to buy pre-release packs. So,
Yeah. It was an article on their webpage. That was about it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, if you like pins and you already like pre-releases anyway, you get a pin and you get pre-release. Bada bing, bada boom.
All right. We have talked about Ixalan an absolute ton. And before I let you go for the evening here, I just really want to ask about Skrelv real quick. It's honestly the way that we bumped into each other for the first time back at Philly, because I recognize the Skrelv, little buddy, I guess.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, Why Skrelv? And I'm just curious about the progress on the new one you've been building. We've obviously talked about this multiple times, and I'm really excited to see what you come up with.
Thank you. The easiest one to answer is, how's the new one coming? So Skrelv 2.0 is kind of halted right now, just because I have a ton on my plate. It's very good that I have a ton on my plate, but in order to do Skrelv 2.0, I have to teach myself effectively engineering, and I am not an engineer. I'm creative, but I'm not an engineer. So in order to do what I want to do for Skrelv 2.0, which is make his mandibles move and his little leggies move while still being a puppet and hand carryable puppet, I got to teach myself a lot of things. So that's slowly working, but because I have so much on my plate, that's kind of on pause right now. However, I am currently actually working on making the world's only second Skrelv that will be up for auction to be able to raise money for cancer research, to be able to be donated in Sheldon Menery's name. So that's actually going to be part of a charity stream that's going to be happening this month, November 18th and 19th, I believe. So if you want the Skrelv that I have created, I'm making it even cleaner and more perfect, you can get this one of two Skrelv in the world and help people, which is pretty great.
Definitely, definitely. It's hard to believe that it's basically been, I guess, 2 months to the day since we lost Sheldon. So
yeah.
It's, I mean, we're going on without him, but I think the community feels a little bit more hollow without him, especially since, for most of us anyway, it seemed like it kind of came out of the blue. So, yeah, Vegas was hard with that.
Vegas was really difficult with that. I think it, in a lot of ways, sadly, like losing someone does, he brought together a lot of people as well. In his passing, just from everyone sharing stories about him, but it was hard.
But any way to be able to raise money to any sort of cancer research is always something that folks should support out there if you have the means to be able to do so, because obviously it's not just Sheldon who is affected by this disease family. It's many it's millions of people, and probably more people than I can even, you know, count. And any way that we can help out is a great thing. So it's awesome to hear.
Yeah. So that's technically what the build is right now, is building that second Skrelv to be able to be up for auction for people to raise money, which is very fun. And I'm very excited to do it. And then why Skrelv? Honestly, I remember looking at that point, Phyrexia Obi-One was getting ready to come out for Philly, and I wanted to kind of make a splash in the magic community, and I had noticed that cosplay was finally kind of starting to take off after however many years it has been of magic conventions. And I thought, I can't make a full costume at this time, but I can have fun and just show off this neat little thing that I can do sometimes. And I was just going through card images in image galleries, and then I just came across Skrelv, and I thought, what a weird looking little guy. And kind of just kept sifting through, but I just kept coming back to Skrelv. And then I kept seeing online that people were like, look at this little dude. And I had the same thought, look at that little dude. And so, like, on a whim, I kind of turned to my wife and I was like, what would you think if I made this weird little beetle guy? And she thought it was a great idea. And so I started kind of like trying to draft up what I thought he could look like if I made him. And there were so many different sketches of things that I thought I can do or attempt to do. And this was all before the cards dropped. So I was kind of working on not the best looking images. And then, funny enough, Pinfinity dropped that they were doing a Skrelv pin, and they had like a really high quality image of Skrelv and the pin that they made. And so I kind of just took that image and was like, okay, I am going to work on what I can see in this image and I will make it happen. And I began just kind of drafting up something I thought would look cute. And he was supposed to be actually a lot smaller than he is. I turned to my wife in a huff, frustrated about working on stuff. And I asked her, how big should this be? And she was mid-nap, I didn't realize. And she said, I don't know. And I took that to be head, your head size. And so that's why Sagrell can fit on the top of my head, is because I thought my wife had said I should make him that big.
Wow, that's an interesting story, but I guess it also makes Skrill very noticeable from a distance away, which is also a good thing.
Yeah, and I think I just wanted to make him look cute and different because he was this weird little slimy beetle thing. And, you know, making slimy things look cute is always super fun. And I think it's something that Wizards has kind of like hesitated on doing, is like finding a creature from each set and being like, this is the fun mascot from the set. And they stopped doing that for a while. And they've started slowly doing it again. Like they definitely did it for Wilds of Eldraine with Sir Ginger and like the gingerbread creatures. But like they don't really do that often enough. Like it doesn't seem like often enough a set comes out in advance that they're like, That creature, people are gonna love. So I just thought that we needed that levity with what was gonna happen with Phyrexians. And so I just built Skrelf and everyone loved him.
Yes, I do also remember all the crazy memes and GIFs and everything where people were just inserting Skrelf into random media. And it was like a wall of Skrelf. It's like, what is going on?
I loved the I think it was like a 5 to 10 hour Skrelf rave.
What?
Yes, the MTG what? Arena did. It was just like, it's Skrelf and a different colorations of mites just dancing to this one song for a few hours.
I need to see video evidence of this because this sounds amazing.
I think it's still on their YouTube channel.
Oh no.
It's a bop.
I'll have to look this up. And again, I make no promises for the folks out there that if you are traumatized by too much Skrelf, it's not my problem.
That's true. Skrelf is love. Skrelf is life. We just got to deal with this. When we go back to Zalfir, I am going to lose it if there are some mites around, because I'll be like, look at those little guys living their best life.
Yeah, because we actually don't know what happened to Skrelv in the rest of the story. That was one of the weird things with those sets. Again, this is my little aside here. It's like we had some interesting side Phyrexian characters, and then they just kind of disappear randomly. And it didn't feel satisfying, I guess. So
yeah, a lot was happening. I think they're in the pressure cooker to come back. Eventually I think we'll go back to what is now New Phyrexia, but that's going to be, I want to say 5 or 6 years down the line, maybe.
No rush. I'm honestly very tired of the Phyrexian story, and I really, and honestly, I think that was my one problem with the fungal bit from Ixalan. It's like, this is way too, it's like, I thought we were done with this crazy body horror stuff. It's like, no more, please. I'm good.
Oh gosh, I'm good. We're gonna get that in 2024, though. Be prepared.
I know. Just like it. I guess I wasn't prepared for like weird fungal infection thing.
Yeah. So fair. That is fair.
Yeah. Again, if people want to hear my thoughts on the 2024 set releases, I did an awesome episode a few months back where you can hear more on those. But again, that's outside of these. Realm of today's episode. But yeah, we are at the 1 hour mark. I'm sure the good folks out there want to go get a drink of water. I certainly do. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been awesome having you on the show, and you're welcome back anytime.
Aw, thanks. I'd love to come back and chit chat about various things and, you know, be in awe if we were correct or not about various Vorthos things.
Yes. Again, I love the Vorthos aspect. Maybe I'm not the most in tune with like every little bit of it, but I do enjoy the lore.
Hopefully this has gotten you of the mind that I am a delightful little Vorthos person. You can find me on TikTok primarily, and Instagram and Twitter, and YouTube and Twitch. YouTube and Twitch are kind of very different. They are going through overhauls right now, but they kind of all those encapsulate me kind of covering various geeky hobbies in my own way to have fun with it and to make people understand that there's more than one way to be a geek with these different hobbies. As long as you're having fun with it and other people are having fun with it, that's the joy of being a nerd.
Mm-hmm. And I'll make sure to put a link to all of your stuff in the episode description for the good folks to be able to find you easily. Because I know that trying to pick this stuff out of audio is always difficult. And, you know, just having a link to click on always makes everything a lot easier. So I will definitely be doing that. So, yeah, it was great having you on the show. And, I hope everyone at home enjoyed listening to this episode. And again, before we get to the end here, I do want to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mdginquarantine. So here's round of thank yous again to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J.R. for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mdginquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.